Welcome through the Word to Psalm 58. Today's psalm is a shocking, imprecatory miktum of David, in which he demands that God brings curses against the wicked. Now, before we go any further, let's just acknowledge the irony of the superscript that directs the psalm to be sung to the tune of "Do Not Destroy." It is also positioned between two historical psalms, Psalm 57 and 59, with similar superscripts that both identify David's years being hunted by Saul as the historical backdrop to their composition. This makes it likely that the wicked rulers David writes about in this psalm, Psalm 58, are power brokers within Israel who are happy to bolster their positions by supporting Saul against David, regardless of his innocence. Now I warn you, imprecatory psalms like this one can be extremely troubling. Images can be graphic and disturbing. Along the way, we also have to wrestle with how to reconcile David's violent prayers with Jesus' commands to love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, and pray for those who mistreat you. We've got our work cut out for us, so let's jump on in. Verse 1. Do you rulers indeed speak justly? Do you judge people with equity? No. In your heart you devise injustice, and your hands mete out violence on the earth. David asks two rhetorical questions right off the bat. Do you rulers speak justly and judge people with equity? David answers them both with a resounding no. In fact, they're doing just the opposite, devising injustice and meting out violence. David knows this is contrary to God's plan for Israel. With these kinds of rulers among God's people, how on earth are the nations supposed to learn God's ways? But David has noticed a pattern. Verse 3. Even from birth the wicked go astray. From the womb they are wayward, spreading lies. David recognizes in people a bentness towards evil. The wicked seem to be set on the wrong path, right from the womb, spreading lies as if it is their native language. In Psalm 51, David had said something similar about himself, confessing, "I was sinful from the time my mother conceived me. Yet you desired faithfulness even in the womb." What a devastating assessment of humanity. Why is this so? David says, verse 4, "Their venom is like the venom of a snake, like that of a cobra that has stopped its ears, that will not heed the tune of a charmer, however skillful the enchanter may be." Did you notice all the snake imagery? Their lies are like the venom of a snake, like that of a cobra. They've stopped their ears so that they're unable to be charmed, however skillful the enchanter may be. Where have we seen this snake imagery before? David is casting our minds back to Genesis 3. The wicked are acting like the serpent's offspring, at war with God's plans for humanity. These rulers have aligned themselves against God's redemptive work for Israel through David, grasping instead a power for themselves. If only they would listen and learn God's ways offered in the covenant. And so, David, hunted by these wicked people, cries out, verse 6, "Break the teeth in their mouths, O God. Lord, tear out the fangs of those lions." The Lord himself has promised to crush the serpent's head. And so David prays against these people hunting him down, saying, "Break the teeth and tear out the fangs of these lions." This is not a polite little prayer. This is David in anguish, praying for God to save him from those determined to eat him for lunch. Verse 7. "Let them vanish like water that flows away. When they draw the bow, let their arrows fall short. May they be like a slug that melts away as it moves along, like a stillborn child that never sees the sun." David stacks up four compelling images here. Water that flows away, arrows that fall short, a slug that melts away, and a stillborn child that never sees the sun. What do they all have in common? Not one of them reaches their potential. The purpose of each one of them is thwarted and incapacitated, erasing its influence in the world. Can you hear David's heart? He longs for God to destroy the wicked, to rescue him and his men, and to prevent these rulers from accomplishing the evil intent of their hearts. This is a worthy prayer from someone being stalked like a wild animal's prey. Verse 9. Before your pots can feel the heat of the thorns, whether they be green or dry, the wicked will be swept away. As he prays, David becomes confident that the Lord will answer him quickly. Like thorns burned as fuel that bursts suddenly into flame, the Lord will sweep away the wicked. Jesus himself urged his disciples to persevere in prayer for justice in Luke 18, promising that when God does give justice to his people, their rescue will be swift and sudden. And when the wicked are suddenly done away with, verse 10, the righteous will be glad when they are avenged. When they dip their feet in the blood of the wicked, then people will say, surely the righteous still are rewarded. Surely there is a God who judges the earth. Listen to the emotion here. Gladness and overwhelming relief. The incredible assurance that there is a God, their God, who has come to put his world right. It's a brutal, graphic image, isn't it? When they dip their feet in the blood of the wicked. This isn't God justifying for David, or for any of us, in fact, the brutal killing of our enemies. No. Remember, the historical backdrop of the psalm is the story of Saul hunting David for years in the wilderness, when God himself forbade David to strike Saul down. No, the wicked here are those who have refused the atoning blood offered in the Lord's covenant. They have rejected his offer of forgiveness and refused to forsake their wickedness. And so, as those who remain stubbornly in their guilt, they have finally paid for their sins with the blood of their own lives. So what of Jesus' commands? To love our enemies, do good to those who hate us, bless those who curse us, and pray for those who mistreat us. As Christians, how do we reconcile Jesus' commands with the imprecations of David upon his enemies? Three things. First, God promises that he will put the world right. While his offer of mercy to sinners does leave room for the suffering of the righteous, God will not allow the ungodly to ultimately derail his good plans for his people and his planet. God does promise us his justice. Second, as we read through the Psalms sequentially, we discover that imprecations have been called down upon all wicked humanity, including upon David and his descendants. Psalm 50 described the wicked as those who throw in their lot with adulterers. In Psalm 51, the wicked adulterer turned out to be David. In Psalm 53, David made it clear that all Adam's race have become corrupt. There is no one who does good. Not even one. That's why David longs for salvation, Yeshua in Hebrew, to come out of Israel to be the righteous one, the anointed son that Psalms 1 and 2 told us is so desperately needed. Third, after his resurrection in Luke 24, Jesus shows his disciples from scriptures like these why it was necessary for the Messiah to suffer. Jesus took upon himself at the cross all the imprecations that humanity had prayed for because of our wickedness done to one another. But in Jesus, our prayers are forever changed. For justice and mercy. For the wicked to come to repentance. To receive forgiveness for their sins as Christ has forgiven ours. I'm hearing Crowder singing as I close this psalm. All the weight of all our evil lifted away forever free. Who could believe? Who could believe? Forgiven, forgiven. Jesus, your blood makes me innocent. So I will say goodbye to every sin. I am forgiven.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.